Hey everybody, Geek Soul Brother here, putting the funk in the Final Frontier. Welcome to episode 297 of Geek Soul Brother and the Nerdy Venoms. In this episode, we talk to the crew, one of the cast members, a couple of cast members of Occupants, the indie film directed by Russ Emanuel. And we also had Eric Cast on there. He was the creator of the comic that accompanied the film. And also we had Tim Connolly, who showed in the film but was also a main character in the comic, and Chris Winters, co-producer and one of the actors in the movie. We had a great time. Everybody dropped some really good game in there, and we really appreciated Russ and everybody coming on the show. We also talked about Kubo and the Two Strings. Me and Jonathan, a.k.a. The Private, gave a good review of that. And then I gave a review of Ben-Hur, which wasn't quite as good as Kubo. But, you know, told everybody about that. And, of course, we had our nerdy news and a few other things that we do on the show. Check us out in iTunes and Stitcher if you do rate and subscribe to the show. And also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube. Got my YouTube videos up. And find the Nerdy Venoms on Facebook and Twitter for all your nerdy news. Also check us out Tuesdays live, TalkShoe.com. Just look for Geek Soul Brother. And you can hear our shows 10 p.m. Eastern. Also don't forget to check out my blog, GeekSoulBrother.com. I got reviews and trailers on there. And also hit us up on Patreon for some donations. If you want to help out the show, we could always use some equipment and stuff like that. Just go to patreon.com/geeksoulbrother, and as little as a dollar will help us out, $1 a month. Just remember, there's a language in the show, so just watch the kiddies around. But other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed the interviews and all the goodness. Take care. Peace.
And we got Dialect, our cousin that has moved in years ago and never left.
And this is for you, Russ.
Now, all right. Do you know what those words mean?
There are subs out there, but they like all like really gibberish, or just it's like double translated from like.
Okay. Doraemon. I grew up with this show. I know exactly what it means. It's like totemo daisuki. I really like Doraemon. That's what it means.
Yeah, I know.
Dalek got schooled.
We were all in the class.
Now your job is to translate the original theme from 1971.
Oh god. Okay, now that you played that for me, who's gonna sing that?
Dalek.
We don't sing. We do not sing. The musical is not until ever.
Well, okay, so who watched that show? Who watched Doraemon? How many of you watched this show?
Well, it's aired in the U.S. like a couple of years ago.
It's airing
what
now,
show
actually.
What show are we talking about?
Doraemon.
So yeah, who does Doraemon stay with?
God, I don't... It's like... Well, they've changed the names.
If Dialect hasn't watched it.
They Americanized it.
It used to be Nobita, now he's Nobi Noberson or something.
Noberson?
Yeah.
he lives right next door.
Oh, yeah, they changed rice balls to hamburgers. They cut out a pizza.
He lives right next door to Beaver.
Wait, does he still eat the dorayaki?
No, he does not.
What?
They cut out... It's the biggest whitewash at Sailor Moon.
Russ's childhood is getting shredded.
Major Makoto Kusanagi in the new Ghost in the Shell film.
Oh
God, yeah.
Put together.
I think he's a perfect casting choice.
Oh Lord,
wow. That's hilarious. All right, let's get started since Dalek gave us some intro music.
Yeah, and also Blur Wars
enlightened us.
And Blur Wars is also on.
Yep.
Too.
Yes,
hey. All
right. Blurred Words.
Hello.
Glad you could join us. We got, for you Blurred Words and for you guys listening out there, all you geeks, all you guys that love interesting, high concept type stuff, we have Russ Emanuel, director, and Eric cast producer of Occupants, the film about, well, Russ, you know what? Welcome to the show again.
Thank you for having me.
And Eric, awesome. Welcome again. Appreciate you guys being here. So real quick, just for the audience, and Russ, I know you did before, but just for audience recap, what's Occupants about?
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, it's about parallel worlds or exploring parallel worlds. It's about a young couple named Annie and Neil Curtis, and she's a documentarian. They set up cameras all over their house, and they're on this really, really interesting diet, the raw vegan detox diet. And whether because of that or their stress level or what, they inadvertently capture a parallel version of themselves on the footage. And then over time, what happens is it's a found footage film. Then it becomes science fiction with the portals. There's like portals and parallel worlds. And then it becomes pure horror. So, you know, that much, that's pretty much what the gist of this film is about.
Nice.
Yes.
And of course you directed, and, Eric, you produced, right? And you had, been the co-producer or
I'm the associate producer, and then I also did some of the behind the scenes camera work for the behind the scenes doc that we did.
Nice. So how has talk about Occupants, how has the film been doing?
Well, we won two major awards. One was at the Phoenix Comic Con Film Festival. We won the second place prize, best of the festival. And then we won the Best Director Award at the Florida Supercon Film Festival. We were in San Diego Comic Con, where we were highlighted in the Huffington Post as one of the highlights of the Comic Con Film Festival, which was a very pleasant surprise for us. You know, I mean, that was just like, wow. And we got distribution a couple weeks ago with ITN distribution for both domestic and international. So this will be coming out on Blu-ray and DVD and whatnot. It will be coming out. We just turned in the last of the materials to the distributor, which was an audio commentary. So
that's fantastic.
You know, Harry's like, you know, the filmmakers talk about the film as the film is going on, and that's an option on a DVD or Blu-ray. So we have we went to the San Antonio Film Festival. We have a panel coming up at the Rose City Comic Con in Portland, Oregon. That's on like September 10th. We have a screening on September 4th at the Action on Film Festival. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Let's just say the film it's been doing well. It's been doing really, really well, and I'm very happy. I'm also very happy with the comic book tie-in that we've been doing, and Eric has been editing that. So I've just been very, very happy about everything.
Well, good. That's awesome. That's fantastic. That's awesome. What? You filmed it in, 2014?
Yeah, it was September, October 2014. And Eric, you remember that, right?
Wow. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but that's crazy.
It was that long ago.
It flew by.
Yeah, it did.
So, Eric, what was your experience being associate producer and also filming some of the background? How was that like?
Well, I call it like it's kind of like going to film school for a semester. The stuff that you learn being on set, especially doing behind the scenes, is pretty amazing. I highly recommend it to anybody that's trying to break into the industry in terms of trying to learn more and trying to hone your skills. Because basically you get to film every single person on the set and ask them what they're doing. So I had some times where I would actually have people on the set, different crew members, explain to me exactly what they were doing at that moment. And it's fascinating. And it's really a really good experience in terms of just soaking up a tremendous amount of knowledge in terms of filmmaking. And again, I highly recommend it to people that are trying to get into the industry and are not sure what they want to do or not sure how to get in, because I think that's a good back door to get into the film industry is behind the scenes.
Right.
And it's to me, it's just fascinating. I really, really enjoy it. because I get to see what everybody's doing. I get to kind of look and put a spotlight on things that otherwise people might not even know is going on. And I get to highlight that stuff. That's sort of the unsung heroes of the film, you know?
Well, Eric, like, you got to meet a certain Star Trek actor, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, the very first day that I went out to help out on the actual filming, that was Picardo Day. That was the day that Robert Picardo came to visit the set, which, as you can imagine, was probably the busiest day on the set because so many people wanted to be there when Robert Picardo was there. So it was very, very crowded. You know, we filmed in a house. This wasn't a soundstage or a set. We filmed in a real house. So there's a limited amount of space in a house, and especially since we had blocked areas off to accommodate the film and the filming and the crew and what have you, it did get a little bit cramped. A lot of people were out in the backyard quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a big day. That was definitely a big day. Everybody was excited. Everybody wanted to be there. You know, Julia, I remember our screenwriter, she actually was there that day, I believe, with her baby, right, Russ?
Yeah, and her baby, Emmy.
Yeah, she, and her husband. I mean, everybody was there. You know, we had some contributors from the Indiegogo campaign, right? Like Paul, right, Russell?
Yeah,
he was there.
Yeah. So we had all. Perks.
Yeah, it was one of the perks. So we had all sorts of people there, and it was just a lot of energy. Everybody was, of course, very, very excited to be there while Robert Picardo was there. And
you know what he's implying, everybody? That after Picardo left, nobody was excited.
Everybody left. It was like, oh, time to go home.
That's just wrong.
I just came here to act with Meg Mucklebones. I'm serious.
Yeah, well, I'm not even on today. I'm out.
I love you in Gremlins too.
I'm kidding, Eric. I'm kidding.
No, actually, it was pretty impressive. Go ahead, Eric. Even going forward, in all seriousness, you know, going forward, the energy level actually was very good on that set. We had a really good crew. I think Russell will agree with that. Is that the crew was pretty phenomenal on this film. They worked really hard, and they were funny, and they were relaxed, even in tense moments, because we had our tense moments on the set, and they really pulled through and did what we needed to get done.
Nice. It sounds like you had a great crew because the film came out great, of course, because you're winning awards and you're getting attention from media outlets like Huffington Post. You know, you bring up Eric and Russ. I did want to ask you why did you pick that location, and how did you come up with a strategy for using the multiple camera / sound footage type of filmmaking for Occupant?
Well, the first to answer your first question is the producer, Howard Nash, he recommended Airbnb. And, you know, at that time, I've never heard of it. And I went on the site and I saw this house, and the people that were renting it out, they were about to leave like the next day to go to like San Francisco where they were going to live. So they were like doing this house renting. And then so they gave me a FaceTime tour, and I immediately said, I want this house. And I showed it to Howard, the producer, and he totally agreed. And then also showed it to the DP, Emil Harris. And Emil Harris is the one that helped come up with the, the camera look, if you will. I mean, of course, it was based on Julia Cameron's script. But what I first was able to do was see the house and logistically plan it out as to where to shoot each of the in each of the rooms so that we can maximize the potential, you know, of the space. And the house itself is just very amazing. And what he said, and we had these pre-production meetings, he was saying that we should cordon off, as Eric was saying, certain rooms and basically say that they don't exist in this house. So in the film house, it's like missing two rooms versus the real house, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
And that way we were able to coordinate everything. And there is one room where it is caught on camera, but you don't really see it. It's supposed to be Neil's office. Neil is the husband of Annie Curtis. And Neil's office, it's the reason we couldn't really show that room is that was the makeup wardrobe room and also my bedroom for the duration of the shoot.
That was occupants plus director.
Occupants plus director. Actually, Eric was, because look, we owned a house for, was it 12, 13 days? It was our house. You know, we paid the money.
Right.
So we could stay there. We owned the house. So I stayed there. Eric stayed there. My friend Jack Roth, still photographer, stayed there. Who else stayed there?
Howard stayed there a couple nights until he went to the hotel. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he came in from New York, the producer. And, you know, I mean, that's the great thing about owning the location. You can leave your equipment there. I mean, literally, you could just walk away from a hot set. And you can come back the next day knowing that the stuff will still be there. So, you know, that's really good because, you know, part of the, I think, the problems with filmmaking is you have all this equipment, right? And every day you have to pack it up. And then take it back to, you know, whoever owns which equipment, right? It wasn't the case with this. We literally could leave C-stands, expensive cameras, the expensive lighting, everything. We just left it.
That was genius to call up Airbnb.
Well, that's the producer. I'm telling you, my producer, you know. Howard, is incredible. I mean, he's the one who came up with that suggestion.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
That's why he's the producer. He's been producing for, what, 20 years? I mean...
Yeah, well, there you go. He's always looking. He's always looking for... And you guys... And the... I guess the artistic... way that you guys use the house rather than because there's other projects, other films out there that have been done that use multiple houses in order to make a film house, you know, seem either bigger or smaller or different in some way, but for you guys to strategically use the house in that way is very good. It's a reflection of your skills and so forth. I'm just telling you,
that house is incredible. Timothy Lee Conley's on, by the way. He's one of the actors in Occupants, and he said he called in.
Is he Southern California, perhaps?
Yes.
In the chat?
Yes. Mm. But did he call in so he can get onto an actual phone call and talk with us?
It should be talk show, yeah.
Yeah, he called in, and that was the noise earlier, actually.
he's been unmuted.
Yeah, he's been unmuted, so.
Oh, Timothy?
Yes, Timothy. I'm here.
Are you there?
Can you hear me? I'm here. Hello?
Hey, Timothy.
We can hear you.
Yes, you're on Verizon.
Welcome aboard.
Or did you just switch to Sprint? I'm not sure.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
Timothy, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be on the show. I'm doing great. How are you?
We're good. I'm Geek Soul Brother. I got my Nerdy Venoms, which are my co-hosts with me, and they'll pop in and whatnot, but... I appreciate you coming on the show, and we're getting the points of view of directing and producing and behind the scenes, and now we have your point of view as acting in Occupants. What? So you played the role of
he played a role in the film, which was kind of a cameo, but it was expanded in the comic book. And that's why I wanted Timothy on the show, because the comic book revolves around his case. Occupants of Future Film is case 831 of the Peterson Research Institute, which is a company run by Dr. Peterson, played by Robert Picardo's character, or by Robert Picardo. Mm-hmm. Now, the comic book deals with case 285, which happens to be the second case of this parallel universe phenomena that has taken place in Los Angeles. So we extrapolate on his cameo in the film for the comic book. And that's what I've been working with Timothy and with Eric Kask. Eric is the reason why the comic book exists. So again, that's what Timothy's doing.
Let's not forget the film within the film, Russell, because that's the bridge between the feature film and the comic book. Let's talk about that, because Timothy is actually featured pretty prominently in that film.
Yeah, so basically the script called for Picardo's character to send Annie and Neil Curtis a video. He says there's even some video of what happened, you know, of these parallel universe things. And so what he sent was what we created, basically, is testimonial videos of people who saw parallel universes. And I had my friends, and somebody's going to come on in 10 minutes or so, Chris Winters. He got his friends. I got my friends, and my friend John Paul. He got his friends, and we all filmed these testimonial videos. Now, and there's 35 of them. Of them, I filmed Timothy, and I used him. You can definitely see him in the film. And I decided, I assigned all these case numbers, like case 99 or case 147, and I assigned different places all over the world. We actually got testimonial videos from all over the world, literally. France, Pakistan, Japan. I'm telling you, everywhere. So I didn't know this at the time, but I inadvertently assigned Timothy's case as being in Los Angeles. So when it came time, and a couple months after that, we filmed out like April 2015. Then a couple months later, I was getting serious about this comic book thing with Eric. And then I was thinking, what is a good story? I'm going, well, why can't they explore another case in Los Angeles? Because we established that the film takes place in Los Angeles. So I'm looking through my notes. I'm going, lo and behold, there we go. Timothy Connelly's case. Case 285, Los Angeles. And that's how come we decided to do that. Right, Timothy?
Nice. And for everybody that's listening, the reason why Russ was on the Kami Gaimani show originally is that Shadow Scout does her segment, Curious Creators, where she finds people that don't normally do comics or comic book type medium, but they've done it for one reason or another. And Russ and Eric and others have created a comic to go along with Occupant. For you guys that didn't know, you can go back and listen, but we'd love to hear a little bit more about the comic, like you guys were talking about, how you put it together and kind of how it fit. Just a recap what you had told us before, Russ.
Well, Eric is the one who came up with this idea of a comic book tie-in. He knows Dave Beatty, who's our artist. He draws for DC and Marvel Comics. And he recommended Dave. And this was, I guess, when was this, Eric? November of last year. We had a conversation with him, a three-way conversation.
It was right after the Comic and Media Expo, which was, in October?
That was in October, yes. Okay, yeah. So, and at that time we got serious. And we decided to, create this 24-page story, a one-shot. And I wrote the story because I knew the film, and it basically takes place during the film, so I didn't want to spoil the film, but at the same time, we wanted to explore Kazune, a new element of Occupant. Well, in this case, what happened was, there's budgetary constraints in a film, so you can't really go all out with, like, battles or explosions or stuff like that, right? So in the comic book form, and so what Eric was saying is you can do that because, it's just somebody drawing it. And so I said, okay, so what can we come up with? And we came up with the story. I don't really want to spoil it, but I will tell you, basically the Peterson Research Institute is explored in detail. And Chris Winters, who played the rep in the film, in Occupants of the film, in the PRI video, he becomes a main character. He becomes the son of Dr. Peterson, Alan Peterson Jr. Then his girlfriend, Nicole, and him, they're like co-workers. They go explore as to what is happening with the Curtises, and also coincidentally with the second case, case 285. which is played by Timothy.
Right. Oh.
Right, Timothy?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add to one of the things that, and Russ, I want to commend you and Eric and Howard and all the team on is this is a very, you know, even with the parallel universe, a very realistic story. And you have a lot of diversity in the story. And that I appreciate, you know, it offers opportunities for actors of diverse backgrounds to have an opportunity and to find some work. So you guys have done a fantastic job, and it's a very believable and realistic story, and I just want to commend you on that on this show.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, I grew up very international. I grew up around basically everybody. So that's my outlook on life, and that's what I want to do in any, I guess, project that I do. So...
I'm glad so you don't have the Hollywood eye.
Yeah, the Hollywood. we need more of that in Hollywood, definitely.
Yeah, it's just my mindset. You know, I grew up. I went to an international school in Japan for about 5 years. So I was around people from all over the world.
Yes, he schooled us the last time he was on the show.
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah.
Maybe we're talking to parallel Russ, you see? Dang, this is actually
I don't know. Was he stroking his goatee at that point?
Yes, he was.
Yes, it was parallel Russ.
That's funny. You but can always tell the parallels by their goatees.
That's right.
Those damn goatees.
In Occupants, the real version has the beard, and the parallel version is clean cut.
That's sweet.
Oh, so you're flipping it. You're flipping it.
So you pulled an inferno then.
Yeah, you pulled an inferno. Shalcat, you had some questions that you wanted to ask there.
Yeah, well, I was just kind of curious to hear. Just kind of what's been the reception by the fans in terms of the folks who've seen the movie and the supporters of the comic book tie-in. Are you getting some feedback about that in the process?
Well, yeah, it's been a very good feedback. And I remember I met you at the Farpoint convention.
Yes. So
I know you were there.
Sorry about that.
Not yeah, the convention.
We didn't really mean for that to occur.
We apologize. She's rather excited.
Oh, yes.
I'm very.
She snuck up on you, didn't she?
Yeah, she's what we call enthusiastic. Okay.
Well, I was so happy to have met. Can I say your real name, Shadow Scout?
That's fine.
To have met Lakita, and
now we must kill him.
Now we know. Some of us didn't know. Now we know.
And no one is half the battle.
All the listeners. We must hunt down all the listeners and everybody.
I wish we had that MIB device now.
I don't remember. What are you saying?
Hey, knowing is half the battle, guys.
Yeah.
Well, I met Lakita. Lakita, I don't know if you noticed, but you were at our first public screening.
Oh, wow.
For Occupants. That was our first one at the Farpoint convention. So the reason I mentioned that, though, is because there was a 13-year-old girl in the audience. I don't know if you remember. And she was, like, so over-enthusiastic about this film. Do you remember that?
I do. She was amazing.
Yeah, and then I was shocked, though. I was like, oh, my gosh. You know? I was like, really? She was a 15-year-old girl was going gaga over this film. I'm going, is that our key audience? Is that our demographic? I thought it was like maybe late teenager or early 20s women. That's what I was thinking, but no.
And it was not just a podcast.
Well, I'll tell you this: there was another event where I think Eric, you were there, where your friend brought his 13-year-old girl, is that right?
That's right.
And exactly she went gaga over the film, too. And I'm going, okay, so in two separate incidences, we have 13-year-old girls who are going gaga over this film. Well, I guess that's our demographic. Okay,
if the film doesn't work out, you can always fall back and just release it direct to Freeform.
Oh, shit.
Nice, Dalek.
Ouch.
But the, okay, so the reception has been good. It has been good, and there has been a lot of people have been asking if there was can be a possible, let's say, like TV series or a sequel. And we're actually talking right now in an official capacity with the writer Julia Camera and Howard Nash and even Brianna White, who plays Annie Curtis in the film. And Neil's played by Michael Pagliacci. But Brianna, myself, Julia, and Howard, we're actually getting very serious into Occupants 2. It's The talks are going on.
Nice.
So I'm just letting you know, you are probably the first people to know that we're actually quite serious. It's not just, you know, somebody just saying something, oh, let's have a sequel. We're actually getting serious about making a sequel.
Nice. Exclusive.
Yes.
So that's the reception, Lakita. That's what's been going on. It's been good. It's been really good. I've been very happy and very blessed with people.
And sounds like you were surprised.
I was surprised. When we had our first private screening, which was at the Writers Guild in December, I didn't know what the reaction would be. And then I got this reaction from my mother, who's usually very critical. Yeah. She's like, "That's mom. This is so good. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is going to sell like that." And she's never liked that. I'm going, "Oh, okay, you know." And everybody else is saying it's good, but I'm thinking, "Okay, but these are like, you know, cast and crew, family and friends, right? You know, they could be just like saying that because they know me." But when we went to Farpoint, that was the true test. It was during that event. And when people like Lakita or this 13-year-old girl, or Lakita and I's mutual friend, was it Mark B. Lee?
Then
Pat Spanagel and Lisa Seneca. Well, Lisa Spanagel. And, you know, these are people that I met, all of you. And it just, you know, we just kept in touch. And I've just been so happy that, that you know, the reception has been overly positive. I mean, you, Lakita, you were with Pat and Lisa to represent the film at
we did Shoreleaf? The fan panel at Shoreleaf,
yeah
so... Chef Scout was out repping y'all. What?
Oh wow. Yeah. that's new.
Wait,
your power is to rep.
Yeah, your power is correct.
If you had a superpower, it would be to rep.
Was that her assignment and we didn't know about it? I mean,
she was the representative of Occupants. She was part of Team Occupants.
That is her superpower. She gets in.
Yeah.
did she get paid? Because I'll hard. Be pissed about that.
She just takes on missions.
She got a free filmmaker badge.
Why would you get pissed? She's doing work. She's putting in the work.
No, I said, did she get paid? Because I would be pissed if she got paid.
I'm saying, why would you get pissed when she's putting in the work?
Yeah. You don't rep.
That's not your power.
Excuse me?
That's not your power.
Well, Lakita, tell them what happened when you went up to get some, was it some actor's signature, autograph?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. So... it was an actor from Star Trek Enterprise.
You didn't lick his face, did you?
Oh. Yeah, another story. You didn't pull a Shumara, did you? No.
No. No, this is another story. Oh, never mind. There were so many stories.
Oh, did that actually happen?
Oh, wait a minute.
You gotta tell us the first story first, then the second story.
Go ahead, Lakita.
Okay, so the first story is... actually, this is a Shade story, so... I shouldn't talk about this.
A gray?
There's a Star Trek Enterprise actor who has a comic book out now, and I won't name any names. But I was like, yeah, you know, we have this great show called the Geek Soul Brother Podcast, and I think you might want to check us out, and you know, we'll help, you know, get word out about your comic book. And he's like, well, I got to listen to what y'all are about because I can't just be on any podcast. And I was like, oh, okay. And his booth was right next to Larry Nemechek. Right next to Larry Nemechek. And I said, you know what? Just talk to Larry if you need a reference. See ya.
Check and mate.
Boom.
Hey, wow.
Hold that thought. Timothy Conley has to go.
So
yeah, Timothy. He already hung up. Yeah,
Timothy.
Oh, that's fine. Timothy, this is post production. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
He did text me. He texted me to say, please let them know I said thanks for having me on.
Oh, anytime. Come back.
Yeah, please come back.
Definitely.
Leave the light on for you.
So just to tap into what Shouscat was saying, Eric, how was reception of the comic? Did you get what was feedback from the comic end?
It's been pretty positive from what I've seen. Obviously, the people that are most involved right now are our backers, since the book isn't finished yet, and so it's the people that are mostly in the know, and we're trying to keep in the know, are the folks that backed the project through Indiegogo. And we did a lot of one of the things we did to raise money for the project was we did a lot of cameos. So we have a kind of established characters that we already established through the film, like Timothy's character that we incorporated, and they have a very big part in the story of the comic. But then we also got people that backed the project that had nothing to do with the film, and we've got them in the comic. So we've got these images of people that are based on real people that backed the project. And so we've been trying to do our best to keep those folks in the know as far as what's going on. And we've been doing updates on Facebook and Twitter, just putting out different images as they come out, particularly a lot of these cameos, so that people can say, oh, wait, that's me, you know, that kind of a thing. And Dave is pretty good at that stuff as far as making those images. In fact, on my Facebook and my Twitter account, I have the image of me from the book. That's what my avatar is now. So,
cool.
Yeah, and it's very cool. I really, really like it. So,
how long you been doing comics?
Well, I started doing comics in 99. I started with a very small independent comic book publishing company that we called Insomniacs Comics, with Insomniacs with an X and Comics with an X. And it was just me and my roommate at the time. He was the artist and I was the writer. We went to San Diego Comic-Con. That was our first time at San Diego Comic-Con, and we got a table. And we were handing out promotional flyers for the books that we were coming out with. And it was a eye-opening experience. And, you know, the thing is, to put it bluntly, you can learn a lot from failure, you know? And sometimes you learn more from your failures than you do from your successes. And Insomniac Comics never really went anywhere. But what it did springboard me into, and the experience of going to San Diego Comic-Con as a publisher, is it kind of got me into this exclusive little club. And anybody out there, it sounds like a lot of you are really into comics. If you want to be a professional, quote unquote, in comics, or you want to get into that world, it's really not that hard. And the best advice I could give to anybody is just do something. You know, I have a local friend out here who is not a very good artist, and he does this sort of like life journal, if you will. That's kind of almost like stick figures, and it's barely a book, really. You know what I mean? In terms of being a comic book, because he's not an artist, but he's one of those guys that likes to write. He likes comics. He got frustrated working with artists. He didn't have a budget, so he just did his own thing, and he's out there at comic cons, and he's out there selling his book, and he's selling T-shirts, and he's doing his own little thing, you know? And so I think people don't realize how. Because the film world is pretty exclusive, too. You know, it feels like once you start getting involved with that, you're within two or three degrees of separation of everybody. Like a good example is Emil, right? Russell, our DP, he went to the premiere of the last Star Wars movie, right? Of the Force Awakens. You know, like he went to that, you know? He was there, you know? It's just like,
Yeah.
So
he's in the industry, so yeah.
Right, yeah, because he knows people, and and this industry is really about knowing people. But comics is even smaller, okay, than the film industry. And so what happens is you have a book, it doesn't matter if it's good or not, okay? That's what I want to put out there. It really doesn't matter if it's good or not. You put a book out there, you put yourself out there, and you suddenly start to make connections with people, and they start to see you as a peer. You see what I'm saying? And so
I don't not to cut you off, I don't want to belittle the contribution of art to a comic or to any medium, but it seems like if you have good writing, interesting writing, funny writing, and, you know, you could have mediocre art, but you can find an audience.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know?
Yeah. Which is kind of ironic.
Versus if you have great art, but the story's not so great, it'll last for a certain while. You'll get attention for a certain while. You'll probably get work out of it. But I think that story and that writing needs a prime example. Of a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about One Punch Man.
Okay.
It's an anime, and it started out as a horribly drawn webcomic.
Okay.
It still is a horribly drawn.
It got better, but it really started out bad, but it caught the attention of some other artists that revamped it, and then it caught the attention of, you know, the animation company, where now it's one of the more popular recent anime series, and it just goes to show what you're talking about, Eric, that, you know, just get out there and do your stuff, and don't worry about it. Advice I've given to people that want to blog and podcast and stuff like that. Just get out there. Put your stuff out there. It'll get better in time, or you'll find your audience or whatever.
Exactly.
Well, talking about getting out there and recognized, our co-producer is valiantly trying to call in, Chris Winters, and he's having trouble.
Oh, is he dialing? Sometimes you just got to hit one.
He says, after he dials in, it says, keep saying same, pin not recognized or being used by another caller. But does have a Skype name. Is it possible to add him?
Yeah. So tell him just to send a...
He did. Send he did. Communications.
He did. He's, his name is Chris Winters, so he should have sent it.
All right. I'm on it.
There you go. Yeah, it'll be good to ask them. So, Eric, where do you go from here? And I'm gonna ask Russ too. But Eric, what's your ambition? Where are you going? What does the future hold?
Well, obviously, right now I'm really concentrating on the comic because it's not quite finished yet. So you got to kind of make sure that you get what you're doing done before you start moving on, obviously. One of the cool things, and you heard with Russell talking about the possibility of a sequel, is really what the comic book did was it opened up this entire universe, if you will, to create another multimedia franchise, possibly. And it is, and technically speaking, it is. As soon as that comic book comes out, it is a multimedia franchise.
Mm-hmm.
With the comic, it sounds cliche, but I always say it, is the possibilities are literally endless. We're talking about parallel worlds here. So pretty much any event you can think of, any situation you can think of, whether it's a historical event or a personal event or whatever that you want to use for inspiration, all you have to do is think about the path not taken, you know, an alternate version of whatever that decision was, whatever that historical event was. And you can make a story about it. We feature very prominently, we introduce a specific world in this comic book that I'm really fascinated with, that I think would be really awesome to explore more deeply. And quite frankly, that could be its own book. It could be its own film. You know, it's that big.
Yeah.
And we're doing that multiple times, and we can keep doing it. So my thoughts are is that the comic book, if it's well received, can become an ongoing series. In addition, we have talked about something like a television show or a web series, which I think this would be great if Christopher was on right now, because he's one of the big pushers of that.
Yeah, because he's trying to come on right now.
Well, as soon as he does, we have a good setup here, because the thing is that we've talked about this idea of what the Peterson research really is and who Dr. Peterson really is. That's Robert Picardo's character. And the idea of expanding upon that. And then also the Peterson Research Institute kind of can become the glue so that this expanded universe, if you will, this multiverse, really, it's a multiverse, has some sort of a consistent undertone, which would be the Peterson Research Institute and their efforts to figure out this phenomenon and kind of study it and that kind of thing, so that you would have something that's consistent when you're going to all these different worlds or exploring these different ideas. So again, like I said, it's cliche, but the possibilities are endless. So I'm very excited about the idea of the comic series being ongoing, but the possibility of a web series or some sort of a television series, maybe something on Netflix, which would maybe feature Robert Picardo a little bit more prominently. Something along those lines. And then of course the sequel, I've already talked to Russ a little bit about some ideas that I had for that as well. But it doesn't have to be just one thing or everything. Like, I could focus more on the comic book, or I could focus more if we did decide to do a series or something like that. Again, because of the basic premise, we're talking about parallel universes here. We really can do anything we want. And like I said, the world that I sort of pitched that is very prominent in the comic book, I think would be really fascinating to explore more deeply, because we have a backstory for this particular world that's pretty elaborate, that's pretty crazy, and it's steeped in actual history.
And also pizza.
Yes, well, pizza is important.
Start off with pizza.
Yeah.
Well, first off, Chris Winters did. The co-producer of the film and also the main character in the comic book, he did request a Skype to Geek Soul Brother, just FYI. Yeah. So if you accept it, he can come on, and I guess we can get his viewpoint. But also...
I'm not seeing his request.
No? You don't see his invite?
It's I am... what's it called? _ Chris Winters?
Yeah, send him a see if you can send him an invite. I am _ Chris Winters. See if you can send him an invite. I'll go in and edit.
Okay. Well,
edit out some of the chatter here. But
you see, we just completed what we call the variant cover. We actually
did that
yesterday, last night, with our letterer, Al Sparrow. Al Sparrow did the comic book, and also a shout out to Brian Miller of Hi-Fi Studios. He colored the standard cover. So,
any of you that are into comic books, you have read stuff that involved Hi-Fi. Hi-Fi is all over the place in terms of coloring. They are all over the place. The Doctor Who comic. I mean, there's so many things. They're doing that new Scooby-Doo comic book. I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. They're just all over the place with so many prominent titles as well, and they're local in Arizona. I'm based in Arizona, and they're a local studio out here. One of the few studios left, it feels like to me, because it seems like everything's become freelance. But they are a very successful, prominent studio in the comic industry, and they do top-notch stuff. They do stuff for Disney, Lucasfilm. I mean, they're all over the place.
Well, so. they also had they were exhibitors at both Phoenix Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con.
Yes, and they were guests as well.
They were guests, and not only that, Brian is going to be a guest on our panel at the Long Beach Comic Con, where he's also an exhibitor and has another panel. So this guy is really good. He's really really good. So I'm just very happy to have him on the team.
Russ, what's your dream project besides doing an Occupants, 200 million dollar budget movie?
I love action films. I The Matrix Reloaded, I think, is an incredibly is an incredible action film. Now, story-wise, yeah, is a little different, but in terms of the action and the choreography, right, and stunts, fantastic, and the music especially, and the choice of the casting was incredible. It's something about the action sequences of that film are fantastic. I would love to do something like that.
Mm. And still steeped in sci-fi, like sci-fi action?
Oh yeah, I love sci-fi, definitely. In The Matrix for me is sci-fi. It is sci-fi. You know, it takes place in what, 2199 or something like that.
It's even further than that. It never really could be the day.
Well, yeah, I know it's deeper than that. It's like Zion's been destroyed what, 6 times or something, right, like that.
Right. Okay, I think I'm on now.
Yes, you are. Welcome aboard.
Oh, who is that?
Chris.
Who's that Pokemon?
is this Alan Peterson Jr. of the Peterson Research Institute?
Why, yes, it is. How are you doing tonight?
Chris here is the co-producer of Occupants, and he's also the main character in the comic book. Welcome, Chris.
Excellent. Chris, thank welcome. You. Welcome to the show. I'm Geek's old brother, and I got my Nerdy Venom. That's my crew. My Nerdy Venoms are with me. If you know Kung Fu movies, Five Deadly Venoms, they're five Nerdy Venoms.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yes. So, Chris, thanks for coming on. I know you had this little bit of choppy moment for a second trying to get on, but I'm glad you made it. So, producing Occupants, what did you have a challenge in particular from your point of view? Did you have a challenge producing it, either pre-production or just getting the actors together, getting the finances or whatever?
Yeah, I would say balancing time is one thing. Time management would be one thing. And then stepping on other people's toes, like, you know, the executive producer and everything else and blah, blah. And then, of course, seeing the movie over and over and over again.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
I love seeing Occupants a billion times.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I've always been excited. I always told Russ that, you know, I'm like, I love this. This is great. You know, I love seeing this magic happen coming out. And, you know, to tell you the truth, this is my first time, you know, producing or help producing a film. So, you know, I learned a lot from him and I learned a lot from other people. And, you know, when I was doing acting, this and that, I've always stuck my nose in the places that I should be sticking myself into. But I always ask questions and, yeah, my dad's always asked. He's always said, "He goes, a stupid question is a bad question? I don't know. I my dad just told me just ask questions and
ask questions, bad or stupid. Just ask.
There's no such thing as a stupid question. Just a bad answer.
Yeah, yeah. But
good one, Toby-Wan. Good one.
Yeah.
I used the Force.
Very appropriate there. Very appropriate.
Oh, by the way, Chris, they each have their nicknames. So if you didn't know that, that's one of the nicknames you just heard.
Yeah, Toby-Wan Kenobi, the Private, Lord Dalek, Shadow Scout, Twitterella.
Yeah, I think I've seen Lord Dalek.
Yeah. Yeah, well, don't stare too long.
I'm still distracted. I'm kind of distracted by the fact his avatar is giving me the finger. But
No, his avatar is giving me the finger. I was having too much trouble getting him on.
You know, that avatar was done like many, many years ago when I signed up with Skype in its infancy. And I was like, I would never use this thing because it will go away in a couple of years. And all of a sudden, Skype is now by Microsoft, and I'm like, oh, shit.
It happened to you, too.
And now it's taken on a completely new meaning.
So, Chris, where do you go from here? I know, you know, Russ and Eric, they just talked about, you know, the beginnings of, you know, maybe Occupants 2 coming together, you know, just the thoughts and kind of like meshing, you know, hashing stuff out. Where do you yourself, where do you think you want to go? Or, you know, I was just asking Eric and Russ what the future holds for them. So with you, what does the future, do you want to produce bigger things or act in bigger things?
Well, I want to keep acting because I've always loved that and I've always loved working with Russ. It's like a big family. And I do want to do more, you know, more involvement in the film, producing. We talked about raising the finances before, and that would be a huge challenge. Maybe some marketing down the road, because, I mean, Russia's got a lot on his plate, so I thought, well, maybe we can try to work on trying to figure out how to separate those tasks. One of the biggest things I'm doing right now is I'm writing, and I've already came up with two stories that I want to write it for not for occupants, but kind of on the same page. And maybe if the executive producer and everything else is happy about that, then maybe that can be put into a movie or a case or whatever. So, but right now I'm also writing beyond occupants and then going into the next one. If there's that happens, I'm doing my own writing too. So,
right.
Yeah. It's, it's really good. I read it. I was a beta reader.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's big, the world he's creating. It's really big. I mean, Chris, if you want to tell them a little nibblies or tidbits.
Yeah. Feel free to do so. Just, you know, I don't want to hijack the thing.
No, you're not. We nibble on tidbits.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, it's a dystopian, apocalypse, dystopian. But it's not your standard, like, oh, my God, the power's out and the whole world's, you know, gone to hell. And it's not about zombies. It's nothing like that at all. Basically,
Yes.
I actually did research on how to destroy the world. And I worked on this novel for about 7 years. And I'm going through another draft of editing. I took a break because I had to take, beta readers' data and compile that and go on. So there's a lot of geek science fiction in there, technology, lots of characters. It's like another Star Wars universe, but on Earth. And basically, the humanity is trying to reconstruct itself. But in the beginning, or actually the end of the beginning, is when people realize it was just an illusion. So it's a lot involved. You have a guy who's cloned like 3 times, and his father has been using him for many, many years to, gather data, work with like different, communities, encampments. He's been using his son to just gather all this data because he feels he's the prophet and this great war is going to happen. And then you have this lady named Echo. She's trying to reestablish humanity by creating the New World Organization, which is biblical times type stuff. So she creates this New World Organization, but in turn, she becomes corrupt, and then now she doesn't like human beings because now she becomes part machine, who's been watching this all along, and wants to say, well, I can't predict humanity, but if I turn everybody towards organic and machinery together, then I can predict and control every aspect of this world.
And so, you got a lot going on.
I know.
Yeah.
Don't give it all away.
Yeah.
Well, I won't give the ending away, but I would tell you that.
But he'll give everything else away.
The clothes on my back.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a journey. It's a journey of like gathering allies. It's very multicultural. I think when Russ actually read it, he did tell me, he said, dude, there's a lot of characters that have very strange, foreign names. Because you have to understand there's people from different countries. And when I thought about this, I did think about 2052, which is usually around the year that's going through. A lot of people, if we ever make it to those years in this world, a lot of people are going to be very multicultural mixed. So you're going to have, strange names. Technology is still kind of imperfect, but it's a lot better than we have now. There's a lot of biomodification, augmented people, cool things like that. There's science stuff in there. I even got a compendium going on right now. It's 400 pages, and it talks about a lot of geek stuff too. So you guys are probably like that.
Is this a comic book, a movie? Are you sure this is not an MMO? Because I would love to play this game.
I know, right?
Like, really.
It's a large novel so far, and Russ is excited. He wants to read the second draft, and
I do. I really do.
You have to get it done. Yes. I'm in the process of the second draft right now, and then you'll be getting that probably within a month or put up another month or a month and a half.
Okay.
So I would like to see it as a movie, but We'll probably have to drum up the Indiegogo and probably pull up like $1 million.
Did you say $1 billion?
Yeah, $1 billion.
I'm saying, still make this a nice game. I mean Warcraft's been doing this thing.
That's funny.
Oh, we do need some more good anime.
Great project. That sounds like a nice project. And I love the fact that you guys have created a comic over Occupants.
Yes.
As a avenue of promotion, an avenue of advancing the storytelling, because I believe that there's so many scripts out there that could be transported into, exported, whatever you want to say, into a comic book and really gain an audience. All these scripts that are sitting on shelves and stuff like that, but you guys already have the game.
True.
You know, diversifying the media for yourself. So that's excellent that you have that.
And I told Russ too. I said, look, Russ, you know, when we were creating the film and us actors were talking amongst each other and everything else, I told him, I said, Russ, you know, you've got a lot of diversity. You have a lot of like stories to tell, and then the parallel universe is a huge thing. Not only that, this is endless writing. Like, I already have two stories I want to do that I want Russ to take a look at that has the similar, you know, parallel universe stuff. But there is so much that can be done, because like when we drummed up all the, you know, the actors from like, you know, across internationally, you know, they gave us their piece, and we're like, oh wow, we can create stories based on their experiences, you know, and like. And it just went on and on and on. And like, and see people in the panels we went to, they even said, we need a TV show like this, because it's the same old rehashed zombie stuff that's on TV, movies. And I'm like, I'm so over
it. Yeah. And I'm so glad. I'm glad that y'all doing it this way, because if Geek Soul Brother remembers, we've been to a couple of movies, one in particular where we were just like, you know, the movie at the end just left you at a cliffhanger for no reason. Yeah. And we were like, if we walked out of this movie and they handed us a comic book that we could just continue on with the movie, that we would have been happy with it. So hearing this, I'm all over this.
Actually, it was Nicolas Cage's next film.
Where... Oh, next with Jessica Biel?
Yeah.
Where we thought the concept was awesome, the movie left you with the cliffhanger, and Toby Wan Kenobi was like, "Yo, if they had a comic book waiting for you outside in the lobby of the theater, the whole experience would have been perfect." But
that's a really good idea. I'm intrigued.
You know,
by that.
Unfortunately, Nicolas Cage was like, "No. We're just going to leave you at this cliffhanger. Bye."
I need Ghost Rider.
You know, that's the problem with movie making, is like when you see those movies and everything else. Like when I was younger, you know, I was raised on Star Wars and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so when I grew up, I like the Hulk. I like, you know, Fantastic Four and everything else. And the thing with that is like I grew up seeing like very limited stuff. And with Star Wars, you know, they waited 2 years before a movie came out. You're like, man, so you're creating your own story. And then all of a sudden, here I am later in life and future, Disney's taking over. And the problem with DC, and I hope I don't get busted for this over here, but when I see DC and Star Wars, they cram their vision down your throat going, nope, that's not how it's supposed to be. It's going to be like this right here. And then they want to give you their vision. And I'm like, no, I created this story a long time ago. I know for a fact that Greedo shot first.
Wait. You're trying to diss Disney? No, Disney was the best thing to happen to Star Wars. Don't get me started.
Uh-oh.
This is Toby One talking. Nah, don't get it twisted. No. I'm totally with you, man. That was a total joke.
Toby One Kenobi get that chat. That's why.
I'm totally with you.
But when you said that, you know, you're giving a comic book out to the people, that's the problem with movie making these days, is they don't have the magic anymore.
Mm-mm.
And like I'm like, give me something else. Give me something to feed off of. Don't just stuff, you know, stuff like marketing down my throat and everything else. Give me something I can live off of.
Even I was listening to a documentary. They're talking about even DVDs, right? Like they used to give you a package when you got a DVD. They used to give you something. They used to give you all the deleted scenes and the commentaries. And I remember Basic Instinct, that Sharon Stone film. Had an ice pick
in the DVD.
I actually have that. I have that edition of Faces.
You, see, that's what stopped it. Wow. That's what stopped it. That right there. They started giving out weapons. They was like, oh, we can't do this no more.
We can't do this.
It's a pen. The ice pick is a pen.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
But that's what I'm saying. It was interesting how they would package things, and it seems like the industry kind of was on that track, but then started losing it. You know, as time went by, and I just think that what you guys are doing, like you guys are ahead of the curve. You guys, we had Joseph Malazzi of Dark Matter. He created a comic for his TV series, and it's just you know, it's just a good avenue to have these different media coming on.
They definitely should be mixing. Like I said, I'm all over this.
But you know what the beauty is? We're in the year 2016, so there's a lot more avenues for getting you know, your work out there in terms of different media, like YouTube channels or a digital copy of the comic book. I mean, one reason why we're here today is because there was a site called Indiegogo that was that we used to raise money successfully, not just for the film but for the comic book. I mean, without those, this could not have happened in 1996.
Well, at the same time, it's a legit thing. There's still a lot of people that are scared to even donate to, you know, stuff like that. But
you are right. And sometimes people would give me $10 in cash, and I would donate in their name.
See, Russ has a very organic. This is one thing about Russ. He has a very organic way of conveying a message. And it shows in his work. Like, he's like, I have heart in this. It's not about the money. It's about the fun and getting a story out and trying to bring back that magic. And that's what really, like, I mean, he raised over 2 times the amount of the comic book thing. And, we went, you know, butts to the wall, you know, getting out there and say, hey, we're going to do this thing, this and that, blah, blah, blah. We're putting, like, you know, promos and, you know, poster bills. And people are like, wow, this is kind of interesting. You know, you have a comic book that's going to be tied in with the movie. And we're like, yeah, we're planning to do some more and, you know, stories. So it's pretty wild.
It's not just me, though. It's you, Chris, and Eric. Eric, you know, it's Eric's idea. This was Eric's idea at the get-go.
That's right,
so,
yeah.
Right, Eric?
Yeah.
Well, we came up with it together, so.
You were the reason why I
pitched it to you. Let's put it that way.
You did pitch it, but I would not have even thought about it.
I love to hear the grind of it. Like I don't remember the last time I heard a grind like this. I guess, like, back in the days of rappers selling their CDs out of their cars. You guys are like foot to the ground and making it move.
That's an indie life. You know,
it is the indie life. Do you know this film submission site for festivals called Without a Box? Have you heard?
Yeah, I believe I heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason is Without a Box. That's exactly what it is. That's what indie people have to do, is think outside the box. Without a box. Right. And that's what we have to do. So, you know, we're thinking, okay, Eric's like, we should do a comic book. I'm like, that's very intriguing. He's like, I know this artist named Dave Beatty. I'm like, okay, I know a letterer named Al Sparrow. I'm like, okay, and I know this colorist named Brian Miller. I'm like, well, maybe we could put in Chris Winters and Timothy Conley and create a story that way. And then we're like, okay, how do we go about to raise the money? I'm like, okay, I'll do a campaign video. You know, where I introduced the project, and it goes on and on from there. And I just think it's very fascinating. It takes everybody to make it happen.
Yes, man. Let's bring Hollywood down. I mean, sorry.
But not before we get some contracts signed for occupancy. Some more contracts. It's great you guys got distribution. That's awesome. Gentlemen, it's Our hour's up for the interview. We just want to squeeze in some movie reviews and stuff like that. But I want to, you know, you guys can stay. Russ knows our format. He can hang out. You guys can hang out and geek out with us and stuff like that. I do want to get, if you guys are on social media, I just want to want you guys to put out in the audience where they can contact you, where they can check out trailers for occupants and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, I retweeted you guys today, too, so on Twitter.
Well, if you want to find out anything about Occupants or the comic book, it's OccupantsTheMovie.com. OccupantsTheMovie.com. You can have links to our Twitter page, Facebook, YouTube, the Peterson Research Institute, the comic book, you name it. It's all there. Upcoming screenings, and we have upcoming screenings. You know, it's two upcoming in Los Angeles, two in Louisville, Kentucky. We have one in Toronto, Canada. We have a panel in Rose City in Portland, Oregon, and Long Beach Comic Con in Long Beach, California. So please come join us.
Nice. Nice. And where can they find you, Russ?
You can find me at russem.com, russem.com.
Nice. And what about you, Eric?
You can find me on Twitter. I go under the handle at BaseGod, BASGOD14. That's also my gaming handle, like on the Wii U and the PlayStation 3.
Nice.
I've been getting a lot more into gaming lately, so I'm starting to do some pickup videos and things on Periscope. So if you go to at BaseGod14, I'm active on Twitter and trying to be more active on it. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was
don't
bass,
be,
like
just
the
don't,
fish.
Just don't be too active on it like I am.
I gotta add you guys actually, so I didn't realize you had a Twitter, so I gotta add you guys, so start following you.
Well, Chris, where can people find you?
IMDb, I have a listing there, and Twitter, my handle is Sorry No Focus, SORRYNO Focus, FOCUS. And
nice.
I think I add you guys today and retweet it, or retweet, but I'm always putting interesting stuff on there too. So, and then Facebook is, I don't remember that one. You just have to type in Chris Winters on that one. You'll see it.
Cool.
We'll look it up and put it on Twitter for you. But we've tweeted out all your Twitter names already, and we'll keep on going.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Excellent. All right, you guys. Well, like I said, you can hang out. We're going to talk about a couple movies. We're going to do some news, and then we'll squeeze in a quick movie review maybe. And we've been trying to cut it a little bit shorter than our usual 2 hour show.
That's not going to happen tonight.
we'll see whose segment gets cut.
On behalf of Occupants, I just want to say thank you again for having us on.
Twice.
Rush, you're part of the family.
Yeah.
Dude, we'll have you on 3 times. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, we'll have you on. Actually, you guys drop so much game for people out there that want to create and film and produce and stuff. So it was really a pleasure to have you guys on. And of course, slow clap to Shadow Scout for,
doing what she does best.
Clap for finding clap. These guys.
That
was
not what she does clap. Best.
All right, so let's go on. You geeks out there, hope you enjoyed the interview. And we're going to continue with our nerdy news, which we have music for.
They didn't realize the king of cartoons was visiting us.
That's off.
Got that Shaw Brothers action. Take it away, Private.
All right, we begin tonight with some major casting news that got a lot of heat over the weekend. The Wrap reported last week that based on the most recent draft of Spider-Man Homecoming script, that it revealed that Zendaya will actually be playing Mary Jane Watson in the film, to which Sony and Marvel later confirmed. Since the news broke, the reaction has been varied, but mostly on the trollish side. However, since then, Stan Lee, one of the creators of the character, has endorsed the teen actress, stating, quote, "If she is as good as an actress as I hear she is, I think it'll be absolutely wonderful."
Excelsior.
Wait a minute. Stanley's backstepping. Stanley's backstepping a little bit. I love you, Stan. Don't get it twisted.
He doesn't know.
He's backstepping.
He's 93.
I'm not twisted. You're the one who's twisted. Excelsior.
He's just sitting back like, oh, is she good? Yeah, she's good. Okay.
So most of the trolls...
Okay. I'll tell you, that Jack Kirby, he's rolling in his grave.
So let's educate some people with a couple little statements real quick. Mary Jane in Spider-Man got red hair.
Not the smoking
white girl
thing.
That has red hair.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's
right. Zendaya is mixed, light-skinned black girl. All of a sudden, people figured that black people couldn't have red hair. Particularly mixed people, like Zendaya, couldn't have red hair. Somehow they forgot that Kristen Dunst, what's her name?
Kristen Dunst.
They forgot that she wasn't a natural redhead, you know, and she was in Spider-Man or whatever. And all of a sudden, trolls were like, oh, I'm okay with the black Johnny Storm, but black people can't have red hair, so Zendaya can't play. Excuse me, as so many people on Twitter had posted, black people can have red hair.
And she's had red hair, actually.
Or, you know.
Really?
Yeah, she's had red hair. It's
possible. And to tell you the truth, I mean, if anybody has watched any anime, come on, blue hair? Of all colors. Of all colors.
As the only ginger on this podcast, I would like to point out that Mary Jane's hair color was never natural red. That was
natural red, right?
No, that joint was blood red.
No, that was not natural red ever.
And by the way, thank you, Alec, for revealing that you don't have a soul.
That's hilarious.
Thanks, John, for revealing the fact you're actually Eric Cartman.
That's funny.
So forget everybody, that all the trolls out there that were trying to bring up the redhead thing. If you don't want Mary Jane to be black, then just say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't hide behind some red line.
Oh,
hair dye number five.
Newsflash. You know what? Black people can have green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Eric Sherman
can have all sorts of things. So,
who?
Stacey Dash.
I'm okay because I think Zendaya and what's his name? What's the kid's name playing Spider-Man?
Thomas Holland.
The one who actually looks like a kid.
I think they're going to have some great chemistry.
I watched a couple of episodes of Casey Undercover. She actually can act, so it's not like, oh, well, she's a model or whatever. She actually can act. She's
kind of Disney Channel acting where it's mostly like hoes deliver bad jokes.
A couple of episodes of season 13.
So it's not like Ariana Grande level acting.
She's all blackness, and
she did a good job.
Yeah.
She did good. She's going to be funny.
Speaking of a female Marvel character, Riri Williams will not be Iron Man when she takes over as Iron Man come October. In an interview with Wired, Brian Michael Bendis stated that the House of Ideas finally settled on naming her Ironheart when she takes over for Tony Stark in the comics.
Isn't that a pony's name?
Yeah, what's the like, Care Bear?
Thank you. Oh my God, I'm thinking the same thing.
she's gonna fight the Mandarin by staring at him.
Now, was she a Care Bear cousin or a Care Bear?
Oh my God, why do you even remember they have cousins?
Yeah,
oh man, yeah. You've been hanging out with Charles Scout too much.
Is that coming from somewhere up in the sky?
Moving on.
And I don't remember the Doraemon lyrics, but I remember that.
And for the Marvel trifecta, a Runaway series is being developed. The popular Marvel comic title is being developed for Hulu.
Oh, so much for it being good.
With the people behind Gossip Girl and the OC tapped as showrunners.
Well, hey. So much for that being good.
Yeah.
Wait, so you hate the Tick?
Hey, I'm excited.
It's on Amazon. I love
one of yeah, it's Amazon. They actually have plenty of, like,
I didn't throw
food.
That off. Oh, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, but are we going to talk about that? The pilot came out last week, sir.
And just a recap on what the private had mentioned in news last week. Hulu did go ahead with that, you know, full
paid model
subscription system where you can't. I couldn't even see a trailer. They were like, subscribe for 7 days for free, and you can see this trailer. Otherwise, sucker.
You know what? I'm glad I'm glad they decided on a direction because I got tired of wait. I pay and I still get commercials. Like, you didn't even know where you was
still
going.
Get commercials, don't you?
No. If you get Hulu Plus, you don't get ads.
No, at all.
I thought they were still doing commercials for some stuff.
Yeah, there's a version that you still get ads in, and there's one that you don't get ads.
I get the one that doesn't get ads. That's probably why.
All the Hulu stuff.
Well, so you're paying like $50.
You're going to have another failure.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Well, not all of it. You still get anime on there.
Mm. Pokemon Go has caused a stampede in Taiwan.
It's gone again.
Over the weekend.
You still play that?
Over the weekend, it was reported that the appearance of a Snorlax in the popular IR game caused mass hysteria as a crowd of people rushed to catch the sleeping Pokemon. Reports do not indicate if anyone was hurt physically. Whether or not their sanity was damaged, however, remains apparent.
Dude, I'm not even... Like, that's a comedy show. That should be put on Hulu. Just to look at it and laugh.
Pokemon like, Go.
just the life, my life in Pokemon Go.
Like, yeah, it makes you nostalgic. What happened to Kato and Ken? Why aren't they doing videos about this anymore?
I don't know. Some other quick news. It is being reported that Devo's Mark Mothersbaugh will be scoring Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, what?
What language was that?
Really?
Mark Motherbrook from Devo. He made the soundtrack to Rugrats also.
Yeah, several Wes Anderson movies.
Jonah Shao has been added to the cast of Spider-Man Homecoming in an undisclosed role.
Yeah, whatever.
Channel person, probably.
No. She's had other.
Everybody from
other
Disney
shows,
is going to.
Nothing Disney. Meanwhile, Jared Leto has gone from sounding like a turtle mating when he laughs to joining the cast of the unnecessary Blade Runner sequel.
Where he's going to sound like a turtle when he laughs.
So he'll bring down that movie too?
So he's going to be laughing in a desert and then somebody's going to mistake him for his mother?
Exactly.
Blade Runner sequel might do something that the original... didn't do.
What, the original TV show or the movie?
It was a TV show.
A lot of people...
I'm hoping so.
A lot of you geeks out there think the original Blade Runner is real boring. It's possible that they're going to action that joint up.
Of course they are. There's going to be like tons of explosions in that thing.
Yeah. Nick Frost has joined Into the Badlands for season 2 of the AMC series. The Flash has added Joey King and Ashley Rickards as Magenta and the Top, respectively. So, two bad guys added. Meanwhile, over on Arrow, Jessica Jones alum Will Travell will appear on season 5 as the Human Target. Gotham is not only bringing the Mad Hatter to season 3, but his sister as well as Nayan Gonzalez Norvind will be playing Alice Tetch. And American Gods has added Corbin Burnson as Wednesday's confidant, Vulcan.
What?
Yes.
Is who's Vulcan?
No.
Corbin Burnson is going to be playing Vulcan.
Vulcan, who is Wednesday's confidant in the series.
Well, so who's Shadow in this series?
Oh,
Shadow's the lead protagonist.
Who's playing Shadow?
I don't
you
remember.
Are.
Oh, God, I forgot.
Our own Shadow Scout would
but
have
he,
that
he
part.
Yeah, definitely
you're playing
like Shadow Scout.
Yeah, he does.
And finally, the mighty Gandalf cannot be bought. It was revealed recently that Sir Ian McKellen was propositioned back in 2013 to officiate a Lord of the Rings wedding for a Silicon Valley bigwig and his wife as Gandalf for $1.5 million. In an interview with the Daily Mail, McKellen said he declined the offer, telling the couple, "I am sorry, Gandalf doesn't do weddings."
Okay, but the question is, will he do weddings as Magneto?
Dude, yo, see, that's where I want to be in my life, where you could just give up that much money because you're just, I'm tired.
It's the guy who
I'm not doing it because I don't want to go to your wedding.
I just want to. It's a shame, really.
If you're willing to give up that much money, though, I think you've already given up a little bit of your sanity.
Yeah.
Well, the guy
thank you. Thank you.
I mean, what is it like? The people from ABBA gave up like $1 billion because some Arab prince wanted them to play for him, and they said no.
But that's like. I'm just saying. Wow. Yo, I'll show up. Wow. I'll show up as him.
You could give up $1 billion now. You know,
I could, but somebody got to offer first, yeah. So I could
just
know
put on
if
a blonde
I could give
wing
it up.
And like, you know, he's that girl from ABBA suddenly.
Chocolate version of that girl from ABBA.
Sing a few bars of Dancing Queen for us.
The sad part is now we don't get to hear Ian McKellen say, "And if anyone ever and anyone objects, you cannot pass."
You cannot pass.
Anyway, for more news and commentary from the Nerdy Venoms, check us out on Twitter at @FiveNerdyVenoms. That's @FiveNerdyVenoms. Or our Facebook page, facebook.com/FiveNerdyVenoms. Again, @FiveNerdyVenoms. And that's your news for this Tuesday evening.
And now Toby Wan Kenobi will sing Waterloo for us.
Toby Wan Kenobi would do your wedding for $30 as a Jedi.
You sounded like the end of a car commercial where they
the disclaimer.
Well, he can't do Waterloo, but maybe he'll sing some Xanadu for us.
That was ELO.
I will park cars at your wedding.
So who saw Kubo and the
Two
Train?
I had plans to. Those plans fell apart.
No, I saw it.
Go ahead and talk about it.
Did you see it or not?
No.
No. I was going to.
We got one person saying yeah.
Yeah.
Kevlar, you still have to see Ben-Hur.
Yo, man.
That poor soul. Are you making him watch Ben-Hur? Come on.
Wait. It depends on which one.
Actually, you know what? I took a bullet for a Kevlar proxy. I watched Ben-Hur.
I knew you was going to do it. I told you was going to watch it.
What's going on with that Ben-Hur?
I told you he was going to go see it.
You'll find out. Anyway.
He's the shit.
Kubo and Two Strings. Kubo and Two Strings. Jonathan, it seems like you liked it a little bit.
A little bit? No, this is probably my favorite movie of the year.
Uh-oh, next to that video game you played with the little girl.
The animation was brilliant, as usual, because it's like, but even then, they pushed the limits of what they can do with a couple of the maquettes. The story was really good. It really did justice to Japanese folklore and things of that nature, despite being an original story.
Despite the fact that all white cast.
We're used to
not
that.
All white cast.
We're used
not
to
all
that.
White. But the majority, but the major characters were white. Yes.
Yes.
No, it was just a really, really brilliant movie. You know, I recommend it highly. To see it, and if I could give it more than five cosmic afros, I would. But yeah, I give it 5 cosmic afros.
Dude, you're making me tear.
Well, very nice.
I give it 10 cosmic afros.
Oh, I think we can move up to 10 at some point.
What your theater wasn't holding over Suicide Squad for yet another week, Dalek?
It is actually still playing there, yes.
Yeah. That's not going nowhere.
Call Suicide Squad all the time.
We only got War Dogs. I don't have any money, so I didn't bother, so I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
What did everybody think of Star Trek Beyond?
What?
We all liked it.
Yeah.
Even with its corniness.
You liked it, Dalek, even with its Robotech shade that you were throwing at it?
I liked it.
Yeah, after watching.
I gave like 4.25, didn't I?
How do you not like Bones and Spock being trapped together? Like, really?
Really?
It, no, see, that, see, and it was part of it. That's what, that, that's what I'm talking about. How do you not like a spaceship, like, surfing fire in space?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds kind of cool, actually.
No, that was pretty, that was like, okay. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That was the okay point, but... You still had to say it was cool.
They had Rihanna instead of Beastie Boys surfing the fire, but
they should have switched those over.
How dare you insult classical music like that?
Nice, nice.
The bangs and the booms. Yeah. No, Star Trek Beyond was good. We were generally more happier with it than
Rathacon. Enter Darkness stepped into darkness.
The Wrath of Lightness, what I call it.
All lightness.
The Wrath of Lightness.
Was that blurred to me? Was that blurred to me?
Yeah, you ain't heard her whispering in the background.
I heard her whispering, but sometimes she'd be channeling her Shadow Scout, so she'd be...
Yeah, right?
What?
Over the headphones, y'all do for a second, but... She's more like chipmunky, mousy.
That's funny. That sounds like an intro.
Not at all. Not at all. We got Squirrel Girl out there. All right, so tell us how worthless you feel for seeing Ben-Hur.
So getting back to Kubo, I like it. I can't give it. I don't think I can give it a 5.0, because if I step back and not be amazed by the stop motion, which was incredible, and just look at the story was very good. I don't think it was a 5.0 very good. I think it was a 4.4 points.
Like the stand.
I want to say 2.5, but because of the stop motion, I'll say a 5. So 4.5. Being that, see, my thing is, the stop motion was incredible only because it's rare. You don't see it a lot, so it's amazing. Yeah.
The Beetle maquette was like phenomenal.
About the water.
All of that. The fights, like the fight between the two, you know, protagonists, antagonists, the baboon and stuff, the fight between that. I liked it. I liked the reveals in it, you know. It didn't feel rushed, but it felt like a mature type of storytelling where they didn't waste time with a whole lot of setup. They just kind of brought you in, showed you what was happening, and started the adventure from there. That was pretty good. And it was big. And I like the reveal and everything like that. Could it have been bigger story-wise? Maybe. But it was a pretty decent, tale. Like Jonathan said, it was a nice... respect to a Japanese tale and stuff. So, yeah, I would give it 4.5 because it was amazing to look at.
Yeah, and
how was the music?
No, the music was on point. No, the music was on point.
I'm always worried about that because, like, sometimes we have, like, a really good, like, animated movie and then, like, they use, like, a pop singer or something and it just...
No, the music was good. The music was good. It held some good...
Well, as long as it wasn't written by, like, say, John Powell or Henry Gregson Williams, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the name. The guy who did Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No,
Dario Marinelli, he's good. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you, GSB. I just felt like if it was a much grander story, I don't think you would have gotten the focus on the characters as much. I think it would have been too much, and I think, you know, this is a very character-driven story, so that's why I was like, yeah. I think the intimacy of that kept it going as is, and I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay as is, so.
No, that was fine. What petered out a little bit for me was with the final, you know, the final villain was, you know, threatening, especially when you look at him towards the little kid, but didn't really bring it to that crescendo of being super threatening, you know. But like I said, the reveal was pretty cool. Like the thought behind it was pretty cool, you know. In there's just to spoil a little bit. There's a whole issue with Kubo only having one eye.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was an interesting philosophical point of the story that I think kids will kind of grab, and adults will kind of enjoy and stuff, you know.
Yeah, there were more adults than kids.
5.0 plus and 4.5. It was a good movie. It was definitely a good movie. Ben-Hur.
Yo, that chariot race. That chariot race had to be hot.
Ben-Hur actually was fairly well acted between the two main characters. What's his name? Houston and Cavill.
Wait, Henry Cavill was in this?
Not Henry Cavill. K-E-B-B-E-L.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Henri Cavill, his generic French counterpart.
Yeah. The one from the parallel universe. Throwback. Throwback.
So real quick, I'll just sum it up. The story wasn't bad. It did go with the whole Ben-Hur and, you know, kind of followed the, I never read the book. I'm just going by the Charlton Heston story. It went according to that for the most part. It ended a little bit different. Not going to spoil that. But the acting wasn't bad, I got to admit.
I've heard a character that dies in the original does not die in this one.
But...
And that's exactly right. And I'm not sure if that's how the book went.
No, it's not how the book went.
Hey, now we're going back
and forth. That's where the tone of it got real corny. And that's where the movie had jumped from, like, all this action and all the chariot and stuff. And then it, you know, finished the tale by talking about, you know, how Ben-Hur was affected by Jesus. I thought it was a little bit overdone. I thought it was, me being Christian, I certainly don't mind seeing Jesus in a film.
Yeah.
But I thought they hit you over the head a little strong.
Well, dude,
does it end with like him and Jesus going to Panama City, like you know, spring break or something?
No. You got people sitting back saying, "Wait,
it ended with the crucifixion, just like it did in the original." But
yeah,
it was a little heavy compared to.
Right.
The rest of you were wondering a little bit why Ben-Hur was feeling, touched by Christ, basically.
Right.
Even though they kind of showed it in the earlier part of the film, for me, I still was like, well, why is he feeling so, you know, so much and whatnot, you know?
Yeah, because in the original, Christ doesn't even have a role. He has no dialogue. He's always seen from behind or from the below the waist or at a distance. It's sort of like just the idea that's important, not the
idea. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I can't quite break it down, but it just felt like it was so serious up until that point. And then it was supposed to be serious with the crucifixion, but it just felt like it was 2 or 3 minutes too long. And like Dalek said, maybe if they had used it more as not a background thing, but like a silhouette.
Can I ask a question?
I find it funny you say this is 2 to 3 minutes too long when it's actually the shortest version of Ben-Hur ever committed to silhouette.
Can I ask a question? Because I'm just starting to see like this weird thing with at least us talking about movies lately. It seems like we're enjoying a lot of these movies from the beginning and then just dropping off at the end.
To the end of the second act. Yeah. Like the climax of the almost a third act, but then something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
It seems like just a thing that we've been going through a lot of movies for a while now.
I don't know what it is.
The third act of the previous 1959 film was like 45 minutes long. It's like people think the movie ends with the chariot race. Oh no, it keeps going.
No, I just call that out because that's like the
and it does. It's not Ben Hur, but M Dog was kind of right. But it's not Ben Hur and Jesus. It's Ben Hur and somebody else. And
yeah, the whole fight thing going on.
Kind of skipping off in the distance, and you're like, huh? What?
It's still going. You know? They're still going. Well, Energizer bunnies.
GSB, thank you for taking that bullet.
But I tell you this, guys. The actors in it, I would like to see them in other roles because the guy that played Ben Hur, was it John Huston?
Jack Huston. Jack Huston.
He did a pretty decent job. I liked his acting. I saw Ben Hur and not here, you know, basically. And Cavill did okay. We could see him in other roles and he might be interesting. And the woman that played Esther was really good. I really loved her. The other supporting cast,
the horses. Freeman, how was the horses?
I don't know how Morgan Freeman is playing rich African chariot racer.
Dude.
And he's still just Morgan Freeman.
Yo, Morgan Freeman. You know what Morgan Freeman is?
Morgan Freeman and oh God.
Yo, you know what Morgan Freeman is? He's like God that in all these movies. It's like, yo, God just disappeared. He left. What is he doing? He's Morgan Freeman.
Was trying to do an accent. It's like Morgan Freeman.
It's like they cast it's like they cast Morgan Freeman to play an elderly Bob Marley from the trailers.
Nah, dude. Morgan, trust me. Morgan.
No, but it's not, yeah, I don't know.
And Morgan Freeman is
dressed with a little poop in front. I mean, Forrest Whitaker's hair in the Star Wars trail looks much better, but.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like a guy, the guy in the same character in the 1959 version was basically just Falstaff. Was sort of a bust. This is a little more of a mute. This is just Morgan Freeman versus the Falstaffian Ilburn of the old film.
No, I'm telling you, yeah. Morgan Freeman is just God on vacation. He's like, I'm just going to come to Earth and just jump in movies.
I get the film. It only messed up for me towards the end. Otherwise, it wasn't. Oh, I'm sorry. And you guys have mentioned music. That's what made me want to talk about it quickly. The music just didn't quite, it wasn't anything wrong with it, except it didn't quite help the emotional level of the film. I think if they invested a little bit more in the music, it would have brought a stronger emotional impact of the film to the film.
Is it like really gory or bloody and stuff?
No. The film itself?
Yeah, because I know there's like a lot. The newer biblical updates, they get like a lot more bloody and gory.
No, I wouldn't say it was overly bloody or gory. I mean, a guy did get stuck under a chariot for a second and then it got ran over.
Well, you needed that. You've got to keep that in every one.
I wouldn't say it was more bloody. I don't think it was more bloody than the original. Not the original, because Charlton Heston's one was like the third one.
And wasn't that, black? Was that one black and white?
No, that was colored.
That was colored.
No, only on your TV, Toby Watt. Toby Watt.
Well, you know my mind.
The only dude that has a black and white LED screen.
No, you know my mind. Everything I saw.
He's the only one. Yeah, his antenna is actually literally a coat hanger.
I'm still seeing it black and white, dude. Y'all need to stop, yo. It's a physical thing. That's not even.
Now.
That's not right. Why are you picking on me?
Anyway, I give it. I think I gave it in my review. I think I gave it like a 2.75, which means anything about 3.0, I'm suggesting that you see it at some point. 2.75 is like, if you skip it, I understand. Go see Charlton Heston. But, you know, the religious community might like it. You know.
They always do. That's why they come back.
No, they don't.
They keep trying to bring in more people.
Yeah, the box office been doing. Talking about box office, let's just, you know what? Only the top three movies, because we got to get the movie phone and close right. out the show.
All right, we got it. Number one, yet again, Suicide Squad with $20 million.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
There's a
number
week,
two. Yeah. No, yeah, number
for
two.
For this weekend.
Number two, yet again, Sausage Party with $15.4 million. And number three is War Dogs with $14.6 million. And that's the top.
I'm sorry. And what did Ben-Hur come in?
Number six.
Kubo and Ben-Hur are two movies. Kubo and Ben-Hur.
Oh, yeah. Kubo came in at number four with 12.6. And then Ben-Hur, number six, with 11.2.
Wow.
I told you that movie was going to be the biggest flop of 2016.
Dude,
I mean...
That wasn't a big guess, Dalek.
Like, yo, dude, come on.
I just can't figure out who they made it for.
They didn't. You know who they made it for. The people.
It's Mark Burnett and his wife, Roma Downey. What do you expect?
Yeah.
You didn't know what they made it for. Not the people.
It might do better in the international market. We'll have to see. It might get a little bit more money in international.
It'll do better if they gave it away for free, or if they sold it with the original Ben-Hur in a box set.
All right, phone movie phone ring ring ring.
Hello, you have selected Mr. Fake Movie Phone. If you're expected to see a movie, here's a better idea. Read a book. Click.
or go see Occupants when it eventually comes to your town.
And read that comic
Occupants.
Book.
Occupants. Well, that's, yes. Is that even scheduled? Or do you have a date?
Occupants, we just got distribution, so they are now approaching companies like Netflix or Hulu, going to distributor goes to the sales market. Well, it could possibly be theatrical. We did create what's called a digital cinema package, which is what's used to screen theatrically. So I don't know. It's possible. It's really up to the deal that that they're able to come up with. Actually, there is a new project, too. I don't know if I can mention that quickly.
Oh, sure. Yeah. What do you care?
I didn't know if it wasn't pertinent to the Occupants comic book. That's why it wasn't.
No, you are family of the room. You are allowed to just speak.
Well, this is something, and I think Chris Winters is still on, so he knows about this. And Lakita, she knows about this one, too. It's called The Whisper Project. And it's a film that I'm doing with my producer, Howard Nash. And it's not comic book related. It's actually more serious. It's in the found footage kind of genre. But it's about what happened when, let's see here. I'll read what is on our Indiegogo site right now. It's on the Indiegogo, and we're trying to raise the money. Several years ago, an African-American family was found murdered in their suburban home. The perpetrator was never found. Suspects included the father, which is pretty much what this film is about, who was later absolved, drug dealers and local police. So the producers seek to recreate or dramatize the events leading up to the crime, including the utilization of film footage, original news reports and interviews with those who were close to the scene. So basically what happened was there was miscommunication between the New Jersey and the New York police departments. And this is actually based on a true story, a true case that happened in 1981. So that's what we're doing right now. And we're at right now 5% of the goal. It's like $3,460. So if anybody is interested in this project, and by the way, Timothy, who is on, he's the one in the video. He's the one who in our campaign video. So he's part of this project, as is Chris. And you go to IGG. IGG is what's used to trend, I guess. It's a trending. Instead of Indiegogo.com, you go to IGG.me/@TheWhisperProject. So that's a project that we're doing right now. And it's very close to the producer's heart. It's his kind of passion project for the last 25 years.
Wow. So,
nice. Yeah. That's wonderful.
And we just tweeted it out.
Yeah, and again, it's a little bit more somber than Occupants, although Occupants can be somber too.
No doubt. Right. We're honest.
Well, there's a difference between true crime and science fiction, obviously.
Yeah, there is. There is. And, you know, the thing that what I love is I love telling stories. You know, pretty much, you know, I love multiple genres. You know, that's just how I grew up on just different types of films. So sometimes I would see, you know, a film like Occupants, but sometimes I would see something like The Whisper Project. So for me, it's like it's just the art of, I guess, storytelling, getting the word out there, trying to entertain people, trying to educate people, if you will.
You are at a home. We love you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't let him box you in, Russ.
You know, there's a reason why I mentioned Star Trek Beyond. How many people here did not like it?
I did not like it that much.
Okay, yeah, well, you don't like a lot of things.
And I tried to.
About this film that's just so slow and lethargic. And that for me, and it the story, it's as if it didn't know where it wanted to go.
Yes.
Wait, thank you. What'd you say? In Search for Which Film? In Search of Spock?
No.
The
new one, Star Trek 13.
Okay, because I know what you're saying. Because Enterprise is what irked me. I'm like, where are you going? And if one of the biggest things is like, you don't have to sexualize it. That really irked me. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, the Enterprise. Enterprise. Yeah.
But he's going to.
No, he had to sexualize it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he's going back. He's talking about the new movie now.
Well, I was actually kind of glad that they showed a NX class starship. I thought
that was great.
That was really cool.
That was excellent.
And that was like the beginning of the Federation because Star Trek Enterprise was before the Federation. Yeah. The last episode is when the Federation or United Federation of Planets, whatever you want to call it, was founded. So this was like in the 2160s, I think. I mean, mm-hmm. as in the old ship, you know, if you know the Idris Elba's character. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Following.
But, yeah, and then they tie into the Mako soldiers and the Zindi, and I like that part. I did. Now, when I saw the saucer crash, I'm going, again?
Well,
you know what? To tell you the truth.
I think I pointed out that on another forum that in Star Trek 1 they find a scary ship that comes out of a cloud. In Star Trek 2 they find Khan. In Star Trek 3 the Enterprise gets blown up. Therefore, in the next movie they're going to they're going to go travel back in time and have to get whales.
Yeah,
you did say. You said that on the cast. And I'm not even. Yo, I don't get a ship that's supposed to be able to separate. And become a like I'm just in the other half always crash with the survivors. Like I don't get it. So the people that's fighting survives, and the people that you send away in the craft, just they end up crashing on another planet. It's just and I'm just talking about every time they do the saucer separation. Except for one episode in the original series where, not the original series, but
they never did saucer separation. The original series.
The original. You know what series I'm talking about?
TNG.
TNG. That was
when they separated. But remember when they separated and they actually sent the saucer section to a station, and then they, it was the only time they would they had a black guy at the hands of the.
Also, in the fifth movie that they'll do, they'll go and meet God. You know, the Enterprise will get taken over.
No,
they're doing that in the books now.
They'll meet Sean Connery.
Yeah, and then Kirk will finally get to fight the Walkman.
The Shakari.
That's funny.
Oh, my gosh.
That's funny. All right.
By the way, Lakita wanted me to mention, I was at San Diego Comic-Con, but I was also at the Vegas convention. I don't know if you wanted me to talk about that.
He knows.
You need to be on our show next week.
I'm about to say, you actually really know how our show rolls.
Yeah, you can have a podcast every week now. You can have M-Dog's job.
I know it's kind of late, so I guess I won't veer into Comic-Con or Vegas. Never mind.
Russell be our newest nerdy Venom.
He is, yes. He's about to get his name.
I'll only say this. It was a pleasure to see Whoopi Goldberg on stage.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, nice.
That was her first convention ever.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they have the hashtag, bring back Guinan.
Yes.
Yeah, bring back Guinan.
Yes.
Yeah. She should actually be around, shouldn't they?
Actually, Noodle wants to play her for Halloween.
She lives thousands of years.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Okay, that's what does it. If Data goes back to 1889 in the Prime universe, how does that work in the alternate universe where Next Gen never happened?
Like, I'm trying to end the show.
Send that question to Disney.
No time to be asking paradox time questions. You still haven't told us what movies are coming out this weekend.
Nothing.
He did say nothing. That's why we started talking.
Literally nothing is opening this weekend. It's like some horror movie, a boxing movie, and I don't know, some movie.
Yeah. It's just Don't Breathe, Hands of Stone, and Mechanic Resurrection.
You have failed. You have one thing to do, Dalek.
I can't be mad at him tonight because of the guests we had on. It wasn't his fault.
Thank you so much.
I do appreciate having
thank you so much. Was Tim still on the call?
Timothy is off, and I think Eric is off, and I don't know. Chris, are you on there? Chris Winters?
Yeah, I'm still on, and I really appreciate
the fact
that you guys told me about it.
Chris is in the shadows.
I heard the whole story, so I didn't see the movie, and I got the whole review, and I don't need to watch it anymore.
Are you playing a game, Chris?
No,
just be real. Chris.
That was cool. Black Nerdity says you need to watch it for certain relationships.
Jayla, her character was the best, and when she kept calling him Montgomery Scotty.
No, you need to put Troy on there. That's the only spot I want to see.
She was good in Kingsman. You know, she's
Don't bring up Kingsman. You're about to start up something else. I love Kingsman.
I thought she was the best character in the film, Jayla. I just liked that character.
Yeah, she was great.
But the movie as a whole, I am sorry. I wish I could like it. And part of me, you know, was missing Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh.
That wasn't good.
I've seen worse.
No, I can't. That was a
lie. As long as you didn't like Into Darkness more than everything else. No.
You know, my favorite Star Trek films, they're like 2 and 6, and I love...
You can't say numbers. Don't say names.
First Contact is
of
good.
The Prime.
Yeah, I don't like this alternate universe thing. But by the way, about Guinan, I remember yesterday's Enterprise. I know, I'm supposed to close this off. I know, hold on. She was able to sense the time variation in yesterday's Enterprise. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, she would know if she was in a prime or alternate universe.
That's right. She had that...
Good call.
Yeah.
She had that power.
She had that power.
She was awesome.
She had a lot of power. I think Whoopi has that power.
The name is dope.
Seriously,
I was watching the tech this morning, like, why is Whoopi Goldberg in the first 5 minutes of this?
Wait, tech?
The tech. The new tech pilot.
Wait, Whoopi was... Oh, as the... she was the TV... Pilot. Yeah, Spoon. She had her own TV show. That's right. I watched that, too. That was... okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Russ Amel. Russ Emanuel and Chris...
Winters.
I was about to say Walter. It's Winter.
They shaved their geeks, old brother.
You guys have been wonderful. A lot of insight and a lot of just imagination that we can see really went into projects and documents and stuff. So check it out. And You can find us on social media, MDog597, Ali_She, Howard Toby, Luminous, Jonathan Jason Zero, Real Lord Dalek, Philrican_Uno, Sharita22. Yeah, doing it from memory. Sharita22, Silent Wonder, Archie Manning, a.k.a. Shadow Scout. You can find the Five Nerdy Venoms on Facebook and Twitter for all your nerdy news. And me, Geek Soul Brother, you can find on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube. You can just search, Google it, it'll pop up. And thanks again for our Nerdy Venoms in the field. Well, almost a Nerdy Venom. Black Nerdity. We still have to come up with their name because we still don't want to hit her with the Afro Scrat. That's what her cousins called her. That's what her cousins call her.
Nah, we got
older
you.
Older cousins. And of course, Blurred Words. Want to thank Blurred Words again on Twitter there. And that's it. Go to GeekSoulBrother.com. Check out the trailers. Check out interviews. Shout Scout put up a nice little cautionary tech tale. Been putting up some stuff there. I just put up some nice trailers. Arrival looks great. Also, hit that donate button. It's that.
Don't hate. Stop hating. Oh, my God. I hurt hate. Oh.
And also, just started the Patreon. So go to patreon.com/GeekSoulBrother. Shout out to Jamie, a.k.a. Black Girl Nerds, who's the first one to donate. Also, Miss Atlas on there. She was the second one to donate. So it's building, you know, small, humble beginning.
Step by
but it's
step.
Building up there. And definitely check that out. And that's it, people. You guys have a nerdy time. And spread the word about the show. You'll hear more interviews from interesting people like Russ and Chris here. And talk to you later.
Peace. Thanks again. Geek on.
Thank you very much.
Geek off.
And now, because the show is so done,
that's an after dark thing. Geeking off is something completely.
Oh my gosh.
No, that is you.